The news that Ginger's parents were going abroad for a fortnight was received by Ginger and his friends the Outlaws with an exhilaration that they strove in vain to hide. Their exhilaration was slightly damped when they heard that an aunt of Ginger's, who had not seen Ginger since he was a baby, was coming to keep house in his parents' absence. "If she's like some aunts," said William, speaking with gloom and bitterness from an exhaustive acquaintance of those relatives. "Oh, she may be all right," said Ginger. "She writes things for papers."
"Oh, well, she'll probably never notice what we're doing then," said William. "She'll watch us doing alpine sports down the front stairs and never know we're there at all."
"I hope so," said Ginger, "because my mother's going to give me 10 shillings when she comes back, if my aunt says I've been good." They showed signs of interest and excitement at this news. It was the custom of the Outlaws to have all things in common, especially tips.
"Oh, we'll get that 10 shillings all right," said William confidently.
The appearance of Ginger's aunt was certainly reassuring. She was a small, short-sighted woman with ink-stained fingers and untidy hair. She took her duties in what Ginger considered a very proper spirit.
"I'm a busy woman, dear boy," she said to him, "and I simply can't be disturbed at my work. Just look after yourself and solve your own little problems as best you can. There's no reason why we should trouble each other at all, except in case of an absolute crisis."
William took a great interest in Aunt Arabel's literary activities.
"I've written some jolly good tales," he told her, "and I wouldn't mind helping you a bit."
"Oh, no, thank you, dear boy," said Aunt Arabel. "You see, I don't go in for fiction. I help our readers in their little troubles of the heart."
"Oh, well, I think diseases are all dull," said William, "whether they're heart or stomach ache or anything else. What do you write them for?"
"For a little paper called The Woman's Sphere. Of course, I sometimes do interviews, but it's so difficult to get really interesting people for The Woman's Sphere. It's only a tuppenny, you see."
But William had already lost interest. It was Ginger who thought of something really exciting to do.
"Let's have a sea fight in the conservatory," he said.
Aunt Arabel stepped from the study to the hall and was brought down to earth abruptly by finding herself standing in a large pool of water. It struck cold and clammy. It swirled around her ankles. Aunt Arabel clutched her skirts about her in terror, and without stopping to consider the particular element that was threatening her, shouted, "Fire!" The cook rushed from the kitchen with the fire extinguisher and proceeded to drench Aunt Arabel with its contents. In short, the absolute crisis had arrived.
"I can't possibly tell your mother you've been good now," she said to Ginger.
Gloom descended upon the Outlaws. They walked down into the village. And in the village, they met Anthony Martin. They did not know that he was Anthony Martin, of course. They saw a little boy of about 6, picturesquely attired, wearing a complacent expression and hair that was just too long. He was a stranger to the locality.
"Who are you?" said William.
"Don't you know?" said the little boy with a self-conscious smile. "I'm Anthony Martin."
William's face remained blank. The little boy seemed disappointed by their reception of the information.
"Don't you know Anthony Martin?" he said.
"Nope, never heard of him," said Ginger.
A shade of contempt came into the little boy's face.
"Good heavens," he said. "I shouldn't have thought there was anyone. Haven't you read any of the Anthony Martin books?"
"No," said William, unimpressed. "Did you write them? I've written books myself."
"No, my mother writes them, but they're about me. Poems and stories, all about me. Nearly 500,000 copies have been sold, and they've been translated into 14 different languages. I've had my photograph in literally hundreds of papers. Have you really never heard of me?"
"No, never," said William. "Why have you come here?"
"My mother's coming for a rest," said Anthony Martin. "She's been overworking, and people have been rushing us so. We're going to spend a very quiet fortnight down here. I'm not going to give any interviews, except perhaps one. The editor of the Helicon wants to send someone down, and I've half promised to be photographed on her knee. Well, I must go home to lunch now. Tell your people you've seen me. They'll be interested. Good morning."
The Outlaws stood open-mouthed and watched Anthony Martin's dapper figure as it strolled nonchalantly away. Then they turned gloomily homeward. They found Aunt Arabel in a state of great excitement.
"My dears, you'll never guess who's come to stay in the village. Anthony Martin!"
"We've seen him," said William dejectedly.
"You've actually seen him?"
"Yes."
"Oh, my dears, I must see him. Oh, I wonder. Of course, the woman's sphere isn't quite... But he does give interviews quite a lot.
Oh, yes, said Ginger. He said he was doing that, being photographed on someone's knee.
Oh, lucky someone, said Aunt Arabel wistfully.
William looked at her, and the ghost of the lost 10 shillings glimmered faintly on his mental horizon. When Anthony Martin strolled out into the garden of Honeysuckle Cottage after tea, he found the 4 outlaws standing in a row at the gate. "Look here," said William. "Will you give an interview to Ginger's aunt? It's a very important paper."
"What is the paper?"
demanded Anthony Martin imperiously. "It's called The Woman's Spear," said Ginger.
"Never heard of it. What sort of thing does it go in for?"
Stomach ache and heart disease and things like that," said William.
"I've never given an interview to a medical paper before," said Anthony Martin importantly. "Come here this time tomorrow and I'll let you know."
Next evening, the small figure swaggered down to them through the dusk.
"Well," said Ginger eagerly, "it's absolutely off. Our agent says that it's a piffling paper and that I mustn't on any account give an interview to it. Anyway, my mother said you could come to tea tomorrow if you liked."
The next day, the outlaws presented themselves, clean and tidy, at Honeysuckle Cottage. Upstairs, Anthony Martin had a suite all to himself, presided over by a crushed-looking creature in a cap and apron, whom Anthony Martin addressed as nurse and treated with the hauteur of an Oriental despot.
"I want you to hear my latest record first," he said to his guests. "Mother's having records made of the Anthony Martin poems recited by me. They're not being issued to the public yet. This one's called Homework. Every verse ends with, 'Anthony Martin is doing his sums.'"
He put on the record, and the outlaws listened to it in a dejected silence.
"I'm making another one tomorrow," went on Anthony Martin. "A man's coming in from Hadley with The Thing, and I recite into it, and then they make the record from the impression. I'm going to do Walking in the Puddles tomorrow."
He took down a large album and gave it to William.
"You can look at the press cuttings, and I'll take the others into my bedroom and show them the toys that come in the stories. You can go downstairs and fetch up the tea now, nurse."
William was left alone in the little sitting room with the album of press cuttings. He turned the pages over idly. Suddenly the door opened and a man entered carrying a kind of gramophone.
"Oh, as the front door was open," he said, "I came straight up with this here. It's not wanted till tomorrow, but as I was over with something for the vicarage, I thought I'd leave it. It's all ready for taking the impression, and all they have to do is pull out this here, and that lets the sound through to the wax. Then they take out the finished impression here and bring it down to us, and we'll fix it up."
He set down the instrument behind a small settee and creaked downstairs. Anthony Martin alone sustained the conversation at tea. The crushed-looking nurse interrupted his monologue to say,
"Now drink up your milk, Master Anthony."
"Shan't," returned the world-famous infant. "Your mother said I wasn't to let you get up from tea till you'd had it," said the nurse.
Anthony Martin turned on her with a torrent of invective, which showed that, as far as mastery over words was concerned, he had inherited much of his mother's literary talent. During this, William remembered that he'd forgotten to tell them about the man with the gramophone. Then a sudden light seemed to shine from his face. He slipped from the room and returned in a few moments, leaving the door ajar. Anthony Martin proceeded undisturbed with his scene, his voice upraised.
"Shan't drink it up. All right, you try to make me, you old hag. I'll throw it in your nasty old face. I'll kick your nasty old shins. I'll stamp on your nasty old toes. You leave me alone, I tell you, you old cat, you. I'll tell my mother. Do you think I'm going to do what you tell me now I'm famous all over the world?"
It went on for 5 or 10 minutes. William sat listening with a smile on his face that puzzled the others. The man at the gramophone shop down in Hadley received his precious burden without suspicion.
"Oh, yes," he said. "Tell him I'll have it ready first thing tomorrow. You'll call for it? Oh, very good. An honour for the neighbourhood to have the little gentleman down here, isn't it?"
William agreed without enthusiasm and departed. He was back at the gramophone shop early the next morning. The outlaws were waiting for William at Ginger's gate and accompanied him at a run to Honeysuckle Cottage. Anthony Martin was strolling sulkily about the garden.
"I'm sick of the country," he said. "There's nothing to do in it. It's all very well for writing poems about, but it's rotten to stay in. Mother made up a ripping one last night called Staying in the Country. Every verse ends, Anthony Martin is milking a cow. She's prostrated again today, of course.
Will you come over to Ginger's house, said William. We've got something to show you there. The disgust on Anthony Martin's face deepened.
It's your aunt wants to see me, and I'm jolly well not going to let her.
No, she's out, said Ginger, and it's something you'll be jolly interested in.
Is it about me? Said Anthony Martin.
Yes, said Ginger. Anthony Martin shrugged petulantly.
Well, I may as well, I suppose, as long as your aunt isn't there.
He followed them into the morning room, where a gramophone stood on a table by the window. In silence, William put a record on. There came a grating sound, then a shrill voice tempestuously upraised.
Shan't drink it up. All right, you try to make me, you old hag. I'll throw it in your nasty old face. I'll kick your nasty old chins. I'll stamp on your nasty old toes. You leave me alone, I tell you, you old cat, you. I'll tell my mother. Do you think I'm going to do what you tell me now I'm famous all over the world?
There was, of course, a lot more in the same strain. Anthony Martin turned a dull beet red. His eyes protruded with anger and horror. He made a sudden spring towards the gramophone, but Ginger and Henry caught him and held him in an iron grip, while Douglas took off the record and William put it in the cupboard, locked it, and pocketed the key. "Now what are you going to do?" said William. Anthony Martin burst into angry sobs. He stamped and kicked and bit and scratched, but Ginger and Henry continued to hold him in the iron grip. "Now listen to us," said William. "This is the only record, and we'll give it to you so that you can break it up or throw it away on one condition."
"What's that?" said Anthony Martin.
"That you give Ginger's aunt an interview for her paper and have your photograph taken sitting on her knee, same as you were going to for the other."
There was a long silence, during which Anthony Martin wrestled with his professional pride. Finally, he gulped and said,
"All right, you beasts, give it to me."
"When you've given my aunt the interview," said Ginger.
When Ginger's aunt returned, Ginger met her on the doorstep.
"He's here," he said, "and he's going to give you an interview for your paper, and he's to have his photograph taken on your knee. He's rung up the photographer in Hadley to do it, and he'll be here any time now."
All the rest of the day, Aunt Arabel had to keep pinching herself to make sure that she was awake.
"Oh, my dears, it's too wonderful to be true. So sweet, isn't he? Such a lesson to all you boys. The things he said in the interview brought tears to my eyes. I only wish you boys loved beauty as that little child does. Oh, it's a wonderful interview. The editress will simply die of joy when she gets it."
William fixed her with a stony gaze.
"We took a jolly lot of trouble getting him to give it to you."
"Oh, I'm sure you did, dear boys, and I'm so grateful."
That tap that Ginger left on by mistake.
There was a long silence, during which William and Aunt Arabel looked at each other, and the connection between the tap and the interview dawned gradually upon Aunt Arabel's simple mind.
"Well, of course, when one comes to think of it, no actual harm was done. In fact, really, it was no more than just washing out the floor of the conservatory and hall. No, Ginger dear, on thinking the matter over, I see nothing in that episode to justify me in making any complaints to your parents."
Aunt Arabel stayed for the night of Ginger's parents' return. She poured out her news in a turgid stream.
"Anthony Martin, you know, the Anthony Martin, yes. Here, a whole half hour's interview. And the editress was so pleased that she paid me double my usual terms. And she's going to give me all the important interviews now. And she's raised my rate of payment for all my work."
"How splendid," said Ginger's mother. "And has Ginger been good?" The eyes of Ginger and Aunt Arabel met in a glance of complete understanding.
"Perfectly good," said Aunt Arabel. "Quite a help, in fact."
"I'm so glad," said Ginger's mother. "You said 10 shillings, Ginger reminded her casually. She took a 10-shilling note out of her purse and handed it to him.
"And now, Ginger dear," she went on, "I want to tell you about some of the wonderful cathedrals we've seen."
But Ginger had already slipped out to join the outlaws, who were waiting for him at the garden gate.